あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
How you doing, Internet? It is February 20th, 2017, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio. I am not Austin Walker. You already figured that out. He's on vacation. He's taking a much-needed rest from all of the things that we do at Waypoint.
We knocked him out and then just kicked him out the door. He was like, get out of here,
basically Austin. Had to tie him and just sort of like, just, you know, make him take vacation because he's a hard-working dude. He's a hard-working man, that Austin Walker. So I'm Danielle Riando. I am joined here today, as always, by Patrick Klepek.
Hello. Hello.
And today we have a very special guest. We have the most special of guests. It is Joel Fowler, Waypoint's publisher.
AKA also not Austin.
Also not Austin. He's just not here.
Yeah, he's not here. Every person has to clarify, are you Austin Walker?
Are you Austin? Well, because, you know, Austin usually does this intro, so, you know, I gotta definitely make it clear, because people, you know, they hear my voice, they hear Austin's voice, they don't know.
You gotta really clarify.
Well, I'm very excited. It's Monday. It's President's Day. That's exciting. Happy President's Day if you get it off, friends. And if you don't, I'm sorry, but hopefully we can bring some sunshine into your life. I have been playing and mostly watching my girlfriend play a very cool game that I am surprisingly into, did not think I would be, and that game is Horizon Zero Dawn, and it's out on the 28th, I think just about a week from today, or week and a day. I know you've also been playing it, Patrick, so do you want to tell me a little bit of your thoughts on what you're digging and not digging so far?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this about Horizon. I was deep and loving Neo as Joel and I Souls fans can attest. Once you get a little bit of the souls, you want all the souls. And Horizon has completely knocked it off for me. I've just been spending of my time, the spare time that I do have, playing Horizon, which I will not call Zero Dawn because it is a bad subtitle. And so I'm going to call it Horizon, which is a totally fine and interesting name for a video. Because Zero Dawn doesn't mean anything.
It sort of does, but it doesn't mean anything outside of the game.
No. Yeah, okay.
So it's like...
No dawns.
Whatever.
So...
Horizon no dawns. No dawn.
And I think the thing that you and I, Dan, it timed with this podcast also, even though we'll have the day, we are not working on Monday, we will have a letter series that will be going up.
Yes.
Probably in a two-part, because me, you, Austin, and Mike are all playing the game.
Yeah.
So it'll probably get spread throughout the week. But the thing that has captured me, especially in the early hours, is just been the world. It's been the mythology they're setting up, the space that you're in. I was immediately captured by the original trailers and announcement of this game because robot dinosaurs, like, you got me, game. Like, the rest of this could be junk, and you've already got me on your basic premise. And, you know, I don't tend to sort of keep up with every trailer that comes out for a game. I try to maintain some element of surprise as much as I can, given that it's my job to sort of keep up with things. But I don't know if this was in the marketing for the game and I didn't notice it, or it was something they were keeping sort of contained away. But I'm just taken by this world that has, like, a lot of religion in it. Has some really interesting social hierarchies that have women at the top. There are a lot of people of color in this game. It sets up a really fascinating world that invites a lot of questions that I am curious to find the answers for or to fill in the gaps on my own. I'm shocked that for a series that this studio worked on before called Killzone, like they worked on a series called Killzone that had very little narrative depth. I didn't play the last one, so excuse me if somehow they found a way to tell a super interesting story in the last Killzone game that they made, a series called Killzone. They killed the zone.
Things change when you become woke, and it sounds like the new game is
I don't know if they brought on writer, whatever happened, whatever they did, they have built a really fascinating world that I want to be in, and it's as much as I'm enjoying traversing and climbing and fighting robot dinosaurs, I still find, at least in the early like the first 10 hours or so that I'm playing, I found myself captured by the world they've built and me wanting to know more about the present world. I'm curious how you feel about this, Danielle.
Yeah.
I'm far more interested in the world I'm in than what the game seems to want me to learn answers about, which is the world that was before whatever techno-apocalypse resulted in this mixture of tribal society and technology that it's left itself in.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's a really fascinating and rich world, like you're saying, and you know, it's never as satisfying to find out exactly what happened to something. And this is like a post apocalypse. It's like, yeah, the apocalypse happened in them, but still there are humans, and then there's also obviously all these machines and that sort of thing. I am experiencing this game mostly by watching my girlfriend play it, which is a pretty awesome way, I think, actually, to experience this game, because the world is so interesting and rich and fun, and I can kind of, you know, take the controller every now and then, obviously, when she's like, all right, I need to go do a thing, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go screw around and play around and sort of, you know, poke around and fight dinosaurs for a little while, that sort of thing. I was immediately drawn in by the intro, even, because I was actually quite worried about this game. Austin and I actually did a little stream a couple of weeks ago where we looked at, like, a couple of hours of the gameplay, basically. And it seemed really self-serious, and it seemed really open-world fatigue-y, if that's a term. You know, I just
totally.
Made it up.
I made it
a term, fatigue-y. It seemed like a very, you know, Far Cry with a totally different vibe to it, basically. And I was worried going in, because I thought, hey, if this is a game about robot dinosaurs, being self-serious is going to suck. Like, that is not the vibe I think of when I think robot dinosaurs. And then, of course, obviously, I was worried about, oh, you're going to have to just do a lot of collect-a-thon type stuff to get anywhere in the game. So when the intro started, and it's like this really incredibly tender and heartfelt experience between Rost, who is sort of your father, especially at the beginning of the game. He's sort of a guy who's an outcast who also takes you in. You're this little girl who is an outcast because you find out all the stuff later. But he's so tender and he's so loving, and he does this ceremony that's like sort of forbidden to outsiders to give her a name. And there's one of the matriarchs who comes in and sort of blesses you for doing this. And I felt like very like, oh man, right there. Like, this is this sort of, you know, this universe that could have been super goofy, and I thought I wanted it to be very goofy because of the robot dinosaur thing, but actually it's like, no, I care about these people. Like, immediately, even though it was kind of a lore dump, it was like beautiful and heartfelt and quite well done, I thought. And all of the writing has been way above par for what I thought it would be, in terms of the characterizations and the sort of the flavor of this world, and the fact that, oh yeah, there's mysteries in the past, and I hope I don't learn too much about them, but I'm really enjoying sort of poking around and finding out how the world works, basically.
What do you guys think of the mechanics so far? Because I played a clunkier demo where you were riding a horse, and I feel like, I don't know, you probably know better than I do, but are there any really great horse mechanics out there?
Because I mean, the Witcher's all right.
Witcher's got some pretty good horses.
Best, but it's got roach.
Zelda's usually got some pretty good horses.
Yeah,
Zelda horse is good.
Yeah.
The Witcher horse is the same as the Red Dead horse. I often run into trees, right?
Skyrim horse is great because the Skyrim horse will go wherever you want him to go.
Like off cliffs.
Oh, the Skyrim horse.
Especially off cliffs.
Yeah, it gives no fucks.
But yeah. I did like the mechanics. You know, I found myself circling whatever the battle I was doing was. You know, you kind of, it's kind of encourages you to run around and like strafe as you're shooting and tethering. But, you know, that was one quick level in there. Like, you're done.
I've liked so far, and again, I have played less than I have sort of experienced watching secondhand, but I've loved how Tomb Raider inspired it feels, especially with all the climbing, with all the sort of running around and jumping, the traversal stuff. It feels more Tomb Raider than Far Cry to me in terms of the way it controls and the way it feels. And that was also a very good thing, because the most recent Tomb Raider game was on my Games of the Year list last year. I love that game. I think it's very tight and very well designed. How about you, Patrick? How do you feel about the game, mechanically speaking, thus far?
I wish it had a lock-on, which it doesn't, because the way the combat works is you're off in these big open fields, and the dynamics they set up for the creatures that you're encountering are a lot of really small ones who are fast, and then a big one that you're kind of slowly trying to take down, and you're setting up traps throughout the world, and you'll pull back your bow, and then if you click the right stick, you can briefly slow down time because they're encouraging you to hit certain weak spots. Like, so if you take a fire arrow and shoot it at like someone's gas canister on their back, you can cause that to explode, and it can not only do a bunch of damage to that individual creature, but then it might be able to hit a bunch of creatures around you. And I just find a lot of the time, and maybe this is the souls in me speaking, but that, like, especially when I'm dealing with like one big creature, I just find it difficult to get out of the way and to wrangle the camera in the way that I want, when if I could just have it locked on to the creature in front of me, I have a better time kind of sort of like setting that up. But generally speaking, I like the basic premise they have, the dynamics they have in combat, where you're setting traps up that can explode paralyze certain creatures. You're looking for these weak points. You're dealing with smaller enemies. You're scanning them. You can also corrupt different creatures, which means if you're hiding in the shadows or in some tall brush and you get up to them before they recognize you, you can actually convert them to your side. So, for example, they have these robots that are based on essentially saber-toothed tigers, and they are just freaking brutal. Like, they are really, really difficult to take down. And fighting one of them is tough enough, but I this morning encountered two of them at once, and I tried to take them both on, and it just, I mean, wrecked, like utterly destroyed within seconds. But on my second approach, I hid, I was patient. You can scan enemies and then see the trails they're going to walk. So rather than the AI patterns that you would have to kind of figure out in your head, you can actually see where they're going to go. So you can set up ambushes, you can set up traps where they're going. And I set myself up behind a rock, waited for one of the saber-tooths to come around, corrupted them, then shot an arrow at the other saber-tooth, which then triggered them to start fighting. And so while the two of them were fighting, I was able to shoot fire arrows in the weak spots of this one saber-tooth, and then he exploded. I collected the loot off of him, and then I ran away while that other saber-tooth was corrupted and confused. And that was like a really fun, interesting to deal with that fight. As long, you know, you can just shoot your arrows, but I think the game really encourages you to try and take advantage of all the stuff that you have at your disposal.
And on the demo, there were a lot of different arrows and bows to select from. Are you finding it, like, feels pretty smooth as you're running into?
Yeah, it's not super overwhelming. Yeah. Like, the game slows down when you're switching weapons, so it gives you a second to sort of, you know, scan an enemy if you've forgotten what their weak point is or what element they're weak to. So all that stuff makes the combat, at least, you know, the 8 to 10 hours that I've played, like, pretty interesting. And I'm, you know, they have like variants on all the creatures you come across, where there are regular robots and there are corrupted robots, and the corrupted robots have different sort of weaknesses. So yeah, so far I'm really enjoying it. And like you, Danielle, I'm a huge fan of the rebooted Tomb Raider games. Yeah. So like the fact that a year ago I got to play Rise of the Tomb Raider, a game I really, really enjoyed, and then thought, well, it's going to be another 2 or 3 years before I get another one of those. And it's like, nope, like Horizon Zero Dawn is basically another Tomb Raider game set in a very unique, interesting setting with just a whole different set of combat options. And so I'm really enjoying the game so far. I worry about where the lore and story are going, but I'm not overwhelmed by the collectible stuff. I don't think they super overwhelm you with it. I mean, one of the ways they set up the collectibles is that they don't do anything for you unless you collect a set of them. So, for example, you can find like these, they call them ancient vessels, because you don't know that like they're cups and stuff like that. Like, the ancient jewelry you can find in the game are watches, but like no one knows what a watch is. And so you can find these collectibles, but they don't mean anything unless you get the whole set. And that usually means anywhere between 5 to 15. So it's like, if you look at that and go, I don't want to touch that, then just ignore it and don't worry about it, because the game has enough for you to do without delving into all the collectible stuff.
Yeah, so this was my first E3 ever this last year.
Oh, cool. All right.
And this was the trailer that stood out to me.
Sure.
The last game I followed from, like, seeing the first trailer to, you know, just like you were saying, Patrick, like, actually followed everything they released was The Division, which I was ultimately disappointed with.
Sure.
So I'm really happy, and I've had to, like, log out of our Discord chat because you guys are...
all three of you logged out.
All three of you are playing this. And you're like, oh my god, this area, what do I do here? And
yeah.
Austin's talking about a lot of the peaks and valleys he's experiencing. Sure. And I'm just like, no, you know?
Like, I need to go in, you know, you could do the marketing materials, but then not the actual heavy chat here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. This will be, I didn't play the rebooted Tomb Raiders.
You should.
I definitely will. Yeah, I'll put that on the list.
At least the most recent one in terms of... You know, gameplay is—it's pretty. The story itself—it's funny. That's the area where Rise of the Tomb Raider I thought was somewhat lacking, because the story was a little bit nonsensical. And here it's like, oh, this is like a really cool world and potentially a really cool story, but with a lot of these mechanics. So,
well, and even if the lore and the answers to like why did the world become this way, even if that stuff doesn't pan out. The game has already successfully established like a lot of really interesting characters and societal dynamics that I find fascinating and I'm interested to learn more about. So I'm not so worried. Like a lot of games or a lot of stories, this happens for, you know, mythology building and in all sorts of media. This isn't exclusive to video games. Like if the only thing that's going to make it satisfying is the answer to that big question, and the big question at Horizon is – like, how did the world become this way? Like, you know, it's not like you get a cinematic at the beginning that's like, and here's how the world became this way. Like, it's clearly a core answer that you're going to get some form of during the course of the game. If that's all you have, then if that doesn't work out, then it's a core failing of the storytelling because they didn't have a great answer for that one thing. But Horizon has already dodged that bullet, because even if that doesn't pan out, I care about so many other things that it won't retroactively taint the experience, because I'm having fun going on side quests and learning about these different dynamics between outcasts and the different tribes, and how women fit into that hierarchy. That's interesting enough for me, regardless of how the rest pans out.
Yeah, it would need to be a like Battlestar Galactica finale level of retconning of its own sort of of itself to be.
Well, we can talk about that later.
To me, it's like the one thing I feel that way about. Otherwise, I'm always on board with like, no, you know what? I was there for the characters, but man, all right. Well, that aside, I'm really excited for you, Joel. One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on today is because we're celebrating. We're celebrating a victory in Joel's life. Joel beat Dark Souls 3.
Yeah, speaking of big questions,
accomplishment. I'm super proud.
That is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And you were talking about Souls, like you were like, you get it, Joel. You know, we're gonna jump back into this Souls-like game. But I expressed probably a giant sigh of relief for myself as well as my fiance for not having to hear this blood curdle, because it would inevitably be the character's blood curdle and then my blood curdle for losing after, 70 plus thousand
you
souls.
You lost 78,000 souls at one point, you told me. That was one of the rougher ones.
That was one of the rougher ones. That was in the archives in the very end. When you're hopping down, it was so dumb because it wasn't even to an enemy. It was just like hopping down to a pillar.
Oh no!
Because you can kind of platform down the level to get this like power up and bow and stuff. But I don't know. I don't know what your experience with Dark Souls is so much, Patrick. But is the pain part of what you appreciate?
yes. Yeah. And well. I mean, there are two ways of looking at it. I don't know if I necessarily say I'm a masochist, but what I appreciate is climbing the mountain. Like the feeling you had, like you're talking about when you have finished the game, like you feel like this weight come off you. Like the process of getting that weight off you, I find to be deeply satisfying in a way that I don't get out of most other games. Like I get other things out of different games, but there is something very specific about the Souls-style games in which you have something just formidable in front of you, and you chip away at it, and you chip away at it, and when you get to that other side, like, it's I found that profoundly satisfying. It feels like an achievement. Like, it's very, it's rare when I finish a game and I go, like, when I finish Horizon, like, I hope I like the story, I hope I like the characters, but, like, it won't feel like an achievement when I finished it. Like
you did something you weren't supposed to do.
Like finishing a marathon or something. Yeah.
I wish more people played the Souls games, but I understand that they're not for a lot of people. And I get a satisfaction over the fact that I did something a lot of other people can't or won't do. Like, there is some – it's not that I like to be elitist about it, but there is satisfaction in, like, I did a tough thing that other people said, that's too much for me. And, like, that feels cool. Like, that feels like an accomplishment to do that. And so that's the satisfaction I get out of those games that keeps me coming back is, like, okay, here's a new mountain. Like, time to scale it.
Yeah, my goal was to – finish that before Horizon, so I'm stoked about that.
Nice.
I'll probably go back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Can do some of the other areas. There's one area I didn't do, the I think Andragon Peak.
Yep. So good luck with the hardest boss in the game.
Yeah. But you know, it was just such a fun experience. But I also, like, weirdly, I don't get to play video games that often, as often as I would like. I have like two or three nights a week that I can play for a couple hours, and I would often like pick Dark Souls kind of with hesitance. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, here
you're
we
going
go.
Into
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you have to steel yourself.
Yeah, it's like
almost.
I can play Rocket League and have a good time, or I, you know, let me chip away at the Twin Princes or whatever. But yeah, I haven't got that same sense of relief and accomplishment from a video game. And it's not just at the very end. At the very end was super relieving. It was like, thank God I don't have to put myself to this for a while.
Yeah.
But even when you beat a boss that was really, really challenging, like, you got those, like, breaks along the way where you're like, you know what? Like, it's okay. I know what to do. And then you go into the next area and just inevitably get crushed immediately. But
sure.
My little dexterity character made it through, and I'll definitely explore the DLC stuff, I think, after I've had a
take a break.
Rest.
First, I seriously think of finishing these games as like finishing a marathon or something, like a brutal physical achievement almost in certain ways. So it's like, have your banana, put on your little space blanket, you know, walk around feeling proud for a while, and then you can go back for more torture, you know. I am very proud of you, though. That is super rad and very exciting. And I think with that, we should take a little dip into the question bucket, a little dipsy. So, you know, Joel, is there a number that's, like, on your mind? Like, do you have a number just imagined in there somewhere?
I was trying to think of how many times I died in Dark Souls, but I don't know if we have that many questions.
We have like 100 and, let's see.
How many hours did it take you to finish the game?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good
72.
One. Okay. Oh, perfect. 72 is a number near and dear to all of our hearts, I feel like. It's a special number for us.
It's a good waypoint number.
I'm scrolling up for 72. Okay, 72 comes from Rhodes. Thank you.
Hi, Rhodes.
For having a cool name that makes me think of my home state of Rhode Island. Good place. Good coffee milk. Hello, Danielle, Patrick, and Austin. I'm adding you in there. And Joel. Editorial done. My friends and I have started a conversational video game podcast, and I struggle with having meaningful things to say. The show is still finding its groove, but I'm often baffled at some of the stuff that comes out of my mouth when I'm trying to say things other than it's good, it's interesting, or it feels good. I want to describe the aspects I like rather than call it a positive experience. We're inspired by Waypoint's why we play motif, but it's weirdly difficult to understand why we feel a certain way. For me, our show actually ends up helping me understand why I feel the way I do because I'm forced to talk about it. It's usually a long, rambling journey to get there. I'd like to be more prepared going in. I guess my question is, do you ever feel silly after things you say on a podcast? As a fan of your site and your show, I never think you're being unreasonable or thoughtless, even if I disagree. Do you have any tips for talking about games without being reductive, or is this something that just comes with time? Rhodes.
That is a question for you two.
I often, not often at this point, thank God, but especially when I was first doing this, I felt really stupid and silly a lot of the time based on things I said, and would like kind of kick myself for a while. I'd be like, oh my God, why did I say that? Not about something that was like offensive or like, I would just be like, I sounded like an idiot there for a while. Like I definitely, and I still certainly ramble, and I still certainly have times where my thoughts are not crystallized to the point where I want them to be by the time I'm sitting here in this chair talking about the thing that I want to talk about. So it's I think it is sort of a constant improvement process, no matter where you are on this journey, unless you're like a podcast black belt. And then at that point, I'm sure you're, you know, pretty happy with your life. But it is challenging. And honestly, the more prep you do helps, as with most things in life. Like if you actually think about what you want to talk about, if you actually, you know, kind of take a second before you do the show, we always do notes. We have sort of show notes where we talk just a tiny little bit about like, okay, we can talk about X, Y, and Z today. This will be, you know, the thing that we do. I find that very helpful. But don't worry, that's how we all start. We all start off hating our voices and feeling a little weird, I think, sort of as we go through the process.
I would say, yeah, obviously, you know, further expertise comes with time, finding your voice, finding ways to articulate what you have to say. One thing that I find very useful is often I consider a podcast to be a rough draft for my thoughts rather than like worrying too much about like whether I got it out perfectly. And what something I find useful, and you'll notice a pattern sometimes with my work, is that like something will come up that I'll say during the podcast and I'll think, well, that's kind of interesting. Like, I wonder if I can explore that further. And then that will become a piece that I write. And right. So if you are someone that have found that your expertise is in writing and you're having trouble translating that to a podcast, take like an idea, something you said on the podcast, and then try and extrapolate that and break it down even further and get more nuanced in a written form. And I think you'll find like, oh, okay, like here's a deeper version of this that I wasn't able to articulate on the spot on a podcast. But, you know, and then once you've gotten that down in the written word, you'll be able to start filtering that stuff into your thought process when you're speaking on a podcast. And so you can maybe use other forms of expressing yourself to help you understand the ways of expressing yourself in podcast form.
I thought it was interesting he asked about the words used to describe stuff and trying not to describe something in the same way, because I think in every medium, like my background is in music, right? Especially electronic music. And there's only so many times you could say like this pulsing bass line or this one, you know what I mean? And it's like there's words that you just have to cut out. And I know I've heard you guys on the podcast say several times where you're like, we're no longer going to say this control scheme is this, or we're no longer going to say this game like gives you this feeling.
Sure.
Like you've just, there's washed words.
You know,
yeah,
you
there's
like
washed words.
Yeah.
And I think with everything that you're talking about, or like whether it's music, whether it's gaming or whatever, you're going to have to practice to find better ways to describe or make, draw comparisons that are outside of that realm. And that's like usually the best way, especially with electronic music, when you can make a comparison that has nothing to do with electronic music, but it describes that EP or artist body of work perfectly.
Yeah, or a feeling, or a, you know, sort of getting at the core of an idea, because it's very easy to get distracted on your way to the core of an idea. I was sort of like visualize sometimes when I'm trying to find a thought. So I'm like a little spaceship in like a nebula or something. It's very Star Trek, I know, a nerd. But I seriously like picture myself as like, all right, I'm like searching for that core. I can't get distracted in the rest of the cool star stuff going on. You know, it happens.
Tim's like nodding his head.
Tim's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, thank you, Tim, for making
Star Trek
me feel
brain.
A lot
got
better.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally got it.
Patrick, do you want to give me a number and we can get probably one more question out of the bucket here?
Looking around.
Whatever inspires you.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Clearly Star Trek inspires me.
Here we go. 22.
22, all right. Early bucket. Early-ish bucket, at least. All right, this one is from Sam in Chicago.
What's up, Sam? Shut down.
Hi, Sam.
How you doing, Sam? I was talking with a friend about Grand Theft Auto 5 recently, and he mentioned Grand Theft Auto Online. I was amazed that it was still going, so I looked it up and found that as recently as last February, it had 8 million players a week and was making Rockstar a huge amount of money. This made me wonder, why does no one talk about GTA Online? I follow gaming news fairly closely and rarely read anything about it. I've also noticed that single-player GTA V, despite being hugely popular and well-reviewed, is not referenced or discussed the way previous entries in this series have been. I feel like more people are still talking about GTA 4 than 5. I don't know if this is because I'm getting older or my move towards PC and away from consoles in recent years, but GTA 5 doesn't feel like it made the same cultural impact that previous Rockstar games had. With that, I will say I know that Patricia Hernandez over at Kotaku does do reporting on sort of wild multiplayer stuff that happens in that game with some frequency, for sure. But they do things a little differently. There are obviously at Kotaku, there are beats, and that's sort of one of the games that does get reported on with some regularity. But you're right, and I think in general, outside of that, Games Press, this is something we're trying to correct, but Games Press does tend towards the future, the previews, the what's coming up, the what's next, that sort of thing. But again, that's why we try to do a lot of retrospectives here. We do try to sort of talk about games that made us. That's like sort of one of our features at the site, are games that meant a lot to us or had some kind of impact or were interesting. In terms of 5 other than 4, I think 4 was such a revelation because wasn't that the first... I think it was one of the first open world games that felt like it was next gen in certain ways. It was a 2008 game. It wasn't on the current generation of systems, but this is very subjective, but I felt like there was a massive difference between the sort of the scope and the scale and the fidelity of San Andreas versus 4. San Andreas versus 4 and the scope between 4 and 5, if that makes sense. But I don't know if that's just like a completely personal perception or I don't know.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the it depends how you look at it. Like, I think GTA 4 had such a giant sort of cultural impact on what we thought of as open world games and like the kind of main character they had. There were a lot of reasons. Also, the story of GTA 4 was better than GTA 5 by a country mile, in my opinion. GTA 5, like, yes, it may not be, I guess, referenced in the way he's speaking of, but it's a game that continues to make tens of millions of dollars for Take-Two Interactive. Like, if you look at their financials, like, GTA Online is doing enormous business. You may not hear about it as much. It may not get talked about, but it is absolutely a huge game that continues to sell at an enormous pace. And so do people talk about with more reverence for GTA 4? Probably. Is GTA 5 a more important game for a lot of different reasons? Probably. That's just, you know, it's just a case in which, like, the way that games writers talk about a game is not necessarily indicative of, like, the actual impact that game is having. You know, I mean, there are games that are being played on Twitch all the time that you don't see any write-ups for in the quote unquote games press, or it's just kind of different. What players are doing is not necessarily one to one with what the games press is talking about.
Absolutely. On any given week, look at Minecraft on Twitch, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
But if you look at coverage, again, very tied to this product cycle, and I think that's something that you, like, as an editorial staff, have done really well. It's like Patrick is mixing reporting on a game that came out 10 years ago that's about to shut down.
Yeah.
And then his thoughts on Horizon. So, yeah, I think as games media is pretty locked into what's coming next, because that means new content, that's a new trailer. Get traffic, pay the bills.
Sure,
so.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you talk to anyone from Rockstar, they're very excited about what they're releasing in GTA 5. And have you tried the new heist? And... I think that game, for me, suffered an awkward release in between console generations.
Sure,
right? Because
sure.
I got really into it and then was supposed to just wait and rebuy it and transfer everything
over. A year later, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost, with a lot of that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's a little weird because I actually think GTA Online is super fascinating in terms of watching it as opposed to playing it. Like, this is how I get some, you know, obviously some of the games that I experience are from watching it. There's a lot of fascinating videos. There's a lot of fascinating weird cultural things going on. I read a piece recently that was about, somebody who, we ran a piece, sorry, recently about someone who was money dropping, who was, you know, sort of like gifting people with tons and tons of money in the game. And it was like this phenomenon, like it was like a secret club, like, oh, if you show up on the beach at this hour, I'm gonna drop millions of dollars on people, and like a select club can come in. And I just love what players do in these like sort of larger games, where it's like you can find ways to make this game entirely your own and kind of play your own games inside of this world. And I've always found that really, really cool and fascinating, and always something that's fun to watch as well, even if you're not playing it yourself, basically. So we're not getting kicked out yet, so I'm going to take one more question from the bucket.
Okay.
One more bucket question. Hey, Tim, do you have a number? It's like 1 to 130, basically. Okay. Minus 72. Well, I'll cut those out because, you know, we did these.
I lost you.
What?
1 to 130, minus 72.
minus 72, okay. Yeah.
40?
40. Perfect. All right, cool. This is not a long one. This is from Naveen in Toronto. Naveen writes, "Your recent discussion about Red Dead Redemption, Undead Nightmare, a lot of words there, has got me thinking about DLC as an excuse to revisit old games. With the recent trend of old PC games getting new levels and missions many years after the fact, see Quake and Duke Nukem 3D, it seems like the time is right for older console games to get fresh DLC that mixes classic gameplay with the lessons of modern game design. I mean, how cool would it be to get a new set of missions for Battlefield Bad Company or a standalone story set in the Bully universe? Anyway, setting aside business deals, licensing, and any other red tape, what games from the last gen would you like to see get the DLC treatment, and what would that DLC be? Cheers, Naveen."
I'm just here to talk about Conkers.
Well, what about Conker DLC?
Oof, what would that be?
So Joel wrote an awesome piece. We all wrote love letters to games last week when it was Valentine's Day. And Joel's was about Conker's Bad Fur Day, a game that I also truly loved. Thought it was underrated in a lot of ways, even though the potty humor maybe doesn't 100% work.
Hold up. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't 100% hold up, but the design of that game is awesome and rad. What would Conker DLC look like in 2017, do you think? Or like, what would you love to see Conker do?
I think, so they nailed a bunch of the multiplayer archetypes.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, if you mixed Conker with 1080, that would be sick.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Like a teddy bear with a sword doing a... I just almost said an ollie, but that's not a snowboarding.
You know,
term.
I knew what you
a
meant.
A mute grab. I know that's...
There you go. Yeah.
Doing a mute grab.
Mute grab. That
Patrick's face.
What is this? Patrick, how about you? Is there an older game that you think would be really nice to, you know, play some cool DLC in your dream world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask is one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
And it's,
yes,
it's a world that... desperately wish Nintendo would revisit. I feel like there are everything about the characters and that whole specific slice of Zelda history is something that it was a real treat to revisit it when they did the 3DS update.
Yeah.
And I've always just wished at some point they'd get desperate enough or run out of enough ideas. They're like, let's just do another one of those and go back to Majora's Mask. And so, yeah, that's if I could get DLC, if I could get anything in the world of Majora's Mask, I would take it.
So nice. That's what I'm playing through on the 3DS now.
Oh, perfect.
For the first time.
Oh, that's such a treat. It's my favorite Zelda game. Well, it interchanges occasionally with Wind Waker. I love them both.
All of you, I was like, what should I get on 3DS? And I think all three of you were like,
Majora's Mask.
And within 10 minutes, I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Good. Yeah. It's super awesome. Yeah. I was going to say, if I could choose, I'll stick with the N64 scheme here, which works. If I could get some DLC, some new levels for Mario 64, that would be really, really fun. With the same mechanics, you know, the same sort of really rich and awesome moveset that Mario has in that game, but with maybe like a little nicer camera, potentially, and, you know, just go whole hog. Like some of that really, really great sort of tight and interesting platforming that was close to perfected in that game. That would be amazing. Let's make that happen, Nintendo. What do you say? For all of these. Well, Rare, you know, Whatever, they can get back in bed. It'll be fine.
I think, well, you figured out how we could all play Conker's here, so we should do that
soon. Oh, yeah. We should definitely do that. We're Conker stream coming up one of these days. It'll be great.
Do you like the newer Mario Kart games with the glider?
Love them. Okay. Yeah. Although I still think Diddy Kong Racing is one of the best kart racing games of all time. But I guess that's a topic for another day. Most likely, we are actually getting kicked out now. So that's a perfect time. Thank you so much, Joel, for being here. Really appreciate it. Where can people find you on the internet?
I am at Free Magic.
Perfect.
And I don't have a Joel Ryder Games.
That's
Facebook.
Sorry. I don't even talk about that one anymore. So Free Magic on Twitter. Awesome, Patrick. Thank you for being here. Where can you? Where can you find yourself?
I really wish I had. If I could find myself, I could answer a lot of other questions about myself. But you can find me on Twitter at Patrick Lowe.
Awesome. I'm on Twitter at Danielle RI, and you can read all of our wonderful stuff, watch and listen to all of our wonderful stuff at waypoint.vice.com, digitalpyramids.com, new.donk.city, bastion.fucks, I think works now.
Bastionfucks.com.
Bastionfucks.com.
Bazinga.zone.
Good. Bazinga.zone.
Creamy Roll.
Creamyroll.com, something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those are all good. And of course, on Twitter, we're Waypoint. On Facebook, we're Waypoint Vice. On YouTube, we're Waypoint Vice. And thank you, as always, to Bowen for letting us use his track, Miss You, off the EP. It's an EP. Yes,
EP.
It's an EP. Pale Machine. Thank you so, so much to Tim Barnes, who is TimBarnes451 on Twitter, for producing this beautiful magic that we call a podcast. Thank you all. Be good to one another. We're going to see you again on Friday. And I'm going to say something that's not peace. I'm going to just say, don't hate. Celebrate.